Welcome back. This is episode 31 of the Next Step Radio Show, part 2 in our series of 6 episodes concerning the sacred science with our guest Crystal Clark.
Yeah, this what I really like about this is you can't run from yourself. And that's what we learn when we learn the sacred science. We learn that we are co-creators. We are creating the world. Even if we don't know that, even if we've been conned in doing it for someone else, we're still participating at levels we don't understand. And what's so neat about this rice experiment is you just take 3 jars, stuff them full of cooked rice, and then on the first jar you put I love you, on the second jar you put I hate you, and on the third jar you just write ignore. And then for about 30 days, you go up to each jar and you exude that kind of emotion and energy and interact with the rice that way. You go up to the first jar, you tell the rice, I love you, that you're grateful, show it gratitude. With the second jar, you can be really mean and nasty and say, you know, I hate you, I'll kill you. And then you just completely ignore the third jar. And anybody can do this, and it always turns out the same way. Because you can't run from yourself. You can't listen to all these people that post these stupid comments on YouTube videos and say, oh, it's all a sham, it doesn't work. If you can do it in your living room, you know it works. And what happens is the jar that you show love and gratitude towards doesn't really rot. The jar that you say I hate you to and give mean energy to, or negative energy rather, rots quite a bit. But the jar that rots the fastest is the one that's ignored. And I think that if people can do that experiment for themselves so that they can see what kind of impact they as an individual have on the world around them, just at the energetic level, because you're not doing anything else but saying something, you know, a thought, a feeling to this water. You're not, you know, being asked to run around the block or get a new job or, you know, go grow an organic garden. You're not being asked to do any of that. You just talk to the water or the rice. It has water in it, so that's part of the principle. But that's all you do. But if you can take that to the next level and you can apply that to what's happening in the world and you begin to realize what systems do we need to live a joyful, healthy, abundant life on this planet, and what systems are artificial constructs. And then you can start devoting your energy to the systems that matter. And then the other ones, just like that jar of rice that was ignored, will rot.
Exactly. And that's the slight point that I think a lot of people miss, because whether it's, you know, the war or politicians, you know, they want to fight against them and tell them how stupid they are and how much they hate them. Well, that you're still giving them your energy. So the better strategy for that with which needs to rot is ignoring it. It is, you know, non-compliance. You know, you can't rewrite all of the unconstitutional laws, but if enough people literally ignored, you know, unconstitutional laws, what could they do? You know, instead of, you know, and I've experienced this myself in a road trip out to San Diego. We went through 7 border checkpoints that were not on the border, going east and west, not north and south. And you know, that gets a lot of press, let's say, in the alternative media, and everybody's railing on the border control, screaming at them. And what if, you know, 500 people just got in their cars and pretended like, you know, and don't run over people, don't act like they're literally not there. But instead of getting out to fight and protest them, if there is enough people ignoring them, at some point they're going to have to stop. You know, if everybody wants, you know, an end to the Iraq war, there's enough conscientious Oath Keeper type servicemen and women and, you know, quote unquote taxpayers, that we don't need to fight the halls of Congress. You know, the soldiers who know what they're doing is wrong just stopped, you know, and found their own way home. And the people funding this craziness just stopped.
Yeah. You know, I heard somebody say the other day, I want to say it might have even been on the Veritas show, I can't remember, but I heard somebody say, imagine if they called a war and nobody showed up.
Right.
I mean, literally, imagine that, because, you know, there's a lot of talk about they're trying to start World War III. That's the Armageddon script, and yes, that's exactly what they're trying to do. And I just really hope that there are people in leadership positions all over the planet that understand what that's going to mean if they continue to give that script its their energy.
Right. Or even us on the non-leadership roles. You know, 2 million people in D.C., you know, with
right.
placards and screaming, you're still feeding it energy. But I think the solution with a lot of these macroscopic problems is noncompliance. And I think that Rice experiment slips right past a lot of people.
Yeah.
They don't transpose that into the larger world, and then they, you know, join a Tea Party to fight the, you know, just it's another round of I hate you, Rice, instead of, or in the last suicide I made, there was a lady who went to a Condoleezza Rice speech at Stanford University, and while Condoleezza's speaking, you know, she stands up and starts,
I heard that. Yeah,
yeah, screaming, you're a war criminal, and just the whole bit, which is not wrong or incorrect, but if you want it to change, the exact wrong approach, because the people who comply and go along with it are who they want, and if you act like that in a room full of their compliant ones, you now have fed their desire to, you know, worship Condoleezza Rice even more. So by acting that bizarre, you know, if you wanted to, let's say, I don't know, you were shopping. I'm trying to think of where two people would be, you know, somewhat. You're in a shopping aisle. It's just you and Condoleezza, and you see her, you know, picking out her rice for her rice experiment, and you want to tell her you think that what she's done is atrocious. And, you know, you consider her a war criminal and despicable, you know, in a calm, non-threatening manner, you know, have at it. But in a room full of her supporters, acting that way just gives them more justification and desire to carry on supporting her.
Yeah, and that's a really good point, because while this woman, and there was a guy, too, after her, wasn't there, I think, in your suicide, who was yelling at her, too?
Yeah, they do these staged protests where they separate, and then as one gets thrown out, the next one starts their little thing, and I
right.
cut it off right at his, but
oh.
you know, it's kind of funny to me just how these people act.
Well, they're upset. I mean, you know, they're upset. They have every right to be upset, but it's true. They're, all that time they spent trying to be creative about how they could have another one show up and another one show up, they could have actually been handing out flyers to get more people to go to the Oath Keepers meetings or attending how to grow your own organic food seminars for free from the market, or they could have been creating the kind of world they know is right with all of that energy.
Yeah, volunteering for Big Brothers and Big Sisters and telling impressionable youth, you know, the truth about war and, you know, the more philosophical point in a caring way instead of, you know, and that was the other fascinating thing about what she was saying. You're responsible. You did this. This is all your fault. And I guarantee you that lady fills out her 1040 form, you know, and buys, military industrial complex company, you know, GE light bulbs and, you know, drinks Coke and has an IBM computer and, you know, all of those things
right.
fund Condoleezza Rice's ability to do what she did.
Yeah, I mean, I get so irritated with people who say the Antichrist is going to come and mess all this up.
Right.
I don't think people get how what's happening. We're the Antichrist that are all participating. There's not one person one person couldn't do this much damage. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
There's no way. We are all participating. And generally, it's done through ignorance, which is why the ignorance came about in the first place. So the people would participate. And they would do it passionately. They would do it because they really do care. They just don't know what's right anymore. That's what's really hard about it, especially with all of the carbon taxes and the global warming and, you know, these little kids in the commercials, what's your carbon footprint? You know, they're being brainwashed already. But because they love their planet, they're so passionate about it. If they could just take that love and channel it with knowledge, wow, we could make some really big changes.
Right, and then there would be the sacred science.
Yeah,
adding the two together.
That's right.
You brought up like the carbon taxes, and that made me think of, you know, fake science and fake news. There seems to be, and especially with the Obama birth certificate, yeah, and it's obviously fake. The Osama final season finale, maybe, I don't know what else to call it, that has so much fakery involved in it. There's a researcher, Ed Sherini, who through a series of serendipitous synchronicities had bumped into an acting troupe who can be directly connected to a lot of these news events, like Holly Bobo kidnapping, the Jared Lee Loeffner shooting, even the private Manning with the WikiLeaks deal, and even Julian Assange himself. There seems to be a huge component to just out-and-out fakery to the agenda these days, you know, it, up until including man-made global warming. First of all, did you get to see any of the Ed Sherini research at WellAware One?
I didn't. I went to the website. I think that it's the red. It's right. It's all red website.
Right.
Yeah. And then I got involved in some other stuff, so I didn't have time to go look at it. But just in case people don't know what you're talking about, I think that you should go into a little bit more depth, because it blew my mind when you told me that. I had no idea. Of course, it doesn't surprise me that they would stoop that low, but it still blew my mind that they actually did. I mean, explain to people what you're talking about, like about the little girl in the shooting that was born on 9/11. People will recognize that one.
Okay, yeah. I've been noticing a pattern lately in whether it's things like Osama bin Laden or the Gulf oil spill was a big one, because so much stuff came out of there. It was hard to tell, you know, what's going on, what's real and what's fake. A lot of the 9/11 videos, whether there's planes or no planes or holograms or little bitty blips, that there's just so much, you know, out there in the video world. I've been following a thread of fake video, you know, just out and out fakery, not even manipulated things, but it's just completely staged. Well, there's a guy named Ed Sherini. He has a website called WellAware1.com, and I've seen him on a few other broadcasts, and I'm trying like the dickens to have this conversation with him.
Yeah.
So everybody stay tuned. He might be a guest coming up, but basically, when the Jared Lee Loeffner case came about, he was a truth movement type guy, and he had known that a lot of times when they run a false flag, there are drills that correspond with said false flag. So he had always been keeping a tab on, you know, when they were and weren't running drills, and then kind of, you know, keeping his ear to the ground if anything where these drills were being running, had been running, were, if anything was happening there. So magically, he's looking at his drill list. There's a multi-jurisdictional type setup in Tucson. He gets a wind of something actually happening in Tucson on that day. It was January 8th of this year, 1-8-11, I think it was. Maybe it was 1-7. Anyway, in January. So he tuned into, and a lot of people, emergency departments in the digital age, transpon their CB transmissions through computers. So that's also able to be sent via the internet, let's say to an officer outside of CB range, or another sister department, or, you know, the state capitol or what have you. So he finds that the Tucson Police Department is running a multi-jurisdictional task force type drill this day. He gets news of some kind of shooting possibly involving a congressperson in Tucson. When he goes to look for the dispatches from the police department, found they're online. So he's putting all this stuff together. As the event proceeds, he notices that the initial news reports don't even match the police dispatches. So they're calling out, you know, this and that and what's happening here and there. And it's not even matching what the news is saying. And all the meanwhile, they're running this drill at the same time. So he was on the Tucson shooting with Jared Lee Loeffner and Congressman Giffords, you know, from the get-go. And he's compiled quite a bit of evidence that they were, you know, this was some type of false flag situation. And then with the, you know, the news that broke and, you know, she was dead, then she wasn't dead. And then, you know, the doctor guaranteed her a 100% recovery. And, you know, the bullets aren't matching up. And there's, you know, a judge there. There's a little girl shot that was born on September 11, 2001 that was, you know, supposed to be in this book about kids born that day. And so this whole Congresswoman Giffords' husband is one of the NASA pilots who has a twin brother that's another NASA pilot, and this is going to be the only set of twins ever to go into space. And just like all these bizarre factors start culminating into one. Well, he's building a file on these people. And he starts to notice pictures side by side. I think first it occurred to him that Jared Lee Loeffner's Facebook picture, his high school or college yearbook picture, and the mugshot not only don't match, but he can tell that it's not the same person. Not to mention the fact they shaved his head, you know, during the interrogation, which... You know, sometimes they do when you enter jail, but, you know, before a verdict is just bizarre that his head was shaved.
Right.
So anyway, he's putting all these pictures side by side. As he's digging for trying to figure out who this Loeffner mugshot is, because it's obviously not the picture of the kid they say is Jared Lee Loeffner. He ran into somebody on Facebook, and two things connect, and he finds the kid... basically is a actor and works with an acting company that rents out studio time cameras and paid actors for, you know, smaller mom and pop type setups that wouldn't necessarily need a PR or an advertising department. So he's digging into this acting company. They've got a bizarre, you know, New World Order type name with bizarre connections to other, military industrial complex companies. And he found out that on their website and this guy's Facebook page, there are other actors that work there. And so as he's looking through these people, one by one, he's noticing that Jared Lee Loeffner's poetry class buddy that told the whole world on multiple news channels that he was a freak. And the thing that gave him away was his bright pink hair. It was just kind of obvious this guy was wearing a wig. But he was that noticeable that he recognized his photo in this acting company. The doctor that worked on Congresswoman Giffords is in this. Some of the people that were you know, on the scene, like an ambulance driver, and he, I think he made 12 or 13 connections of people involved in the Loeffner case directly to this acting company. So. That being bizarre in and of itself obviously lit a fire. He's, you know, investigating the heck out of it. He gets a cohort, another lady who has another website helping him. She goes through all the media reports and a lot of the stories that these witnesses are telling. You know, different mainstream news people don't match up with what happened. And the whole thing's bizarre. So he's noticing that they all fit into this acting company, up into including the little girl that supposedly is Sarah Green or Jessica Green, I forget. The photo we were given of her looked an awful lot like one of the adult actresses in this company. Like if the current version of this actress had, you know, an 8 or 10 year old photo, you know, it would look strikingly similar. And he noticed in her eyebrow, there was a distinct anomaly, a growth pattern. I think like some of the eyebrow grew in a different direction than the rest that it was supposed to, like there was a scar underneath it or something that matched, you know, like 100% with the adult version of this lady. So he's like, no way, you know, that can't be. He started digging through birth and death records, could find no such person as this Sarah Green or Jessica Green, I can't remember. And then by happenstance, also noticed that the woman claiming to be her mother in a lot of these news reports was magically one of these actresses also.
That is so crazy. And you know, when you were telling me about Manning, the guy who supposedly he gave that information to WikiLeaks, right?
But, yeah, Bradley Manning.
Bradley Manning, right. When you were telling me about him, I thought, oh my God, you know what? When I saw the pictures that they were sending around the internet of him, supposedly him after he's been abused in jail, I'm like, there's no way that's the same person.
Right, and it's apparently it's not. So, yeah, fast forward the story. So he's going through all kinds of, you know, current event mainstream news stuff. Bradley Manning, the picture we're given of whoever this guy is one of the actors. He had, in his research, found that Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, and one of the bin Ladens that's supposedly Osama's brother, was the exact same person. There's a myriad of these things he's already uncovered. Oh, like I said, the Holly Bobo kidnapping, all of that, her husband, her, the whole thing, these were actors. And the disturbing part is this acting troupe, and some of these people also have connections to a software company that is trying to basically, they do have it. The current version of the software is an inventory management type situation where you can track movement of goods and things between production and distribution and store shelves. But they're trying to basically use all of the information from social networking sites in correlation with the software to track people in real time for law enforcement's sake. So if, you know, a little girl disappears wherever, this thing can jam through all of her Facebook friends, you know, all of the Google searches, anybody that's ever searched her page, you know, narrow down a list of people who would know anything. So they're basically building a software interface in between social networking and law enforcement for quote unquote, you know, helping people. But which is bizarre, so that's why they would want to create all of these, you know, sob stories for, you know, Jared Lee Loeffner's a Facebook terrorist and or a YouTube terrorist and a Facebook bully and, you know, all this cyberbullying that's going on and kidnappings. A lot of these stories, especially with Bradley, Bradley Manning and WikiLeaks, you know, all tie into this net security, censorship, cyber tracking.
Right.
So, yeah, that led to the bigger question. If this one guy, you know, trying to figure out who this Loeffner mugshot was, you know, within 4 or 5 weeks stumbles into about 8 of the biggest stories of the year being not only manipulated, but outright just not even real. Fake from the get-go. never happened up until including doctors of these people that are shot are actually actors.
That is, oh my God, you know, I mean, it's surprising. It's shocking, but it's not surprising. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can't put it past them, you know? You just can't. And I when I saw that picture of the before Manning and the after Manning, I that's the first thing I thought to myself is there's no way that's the same person. There's no way.
Yeah, with the Osama whole season finale, you know, you just look at anything and everything he's done since, you know, Bill Clinton in that CNN interview where the guy just waltzes right into his hideout with a camera crew, and apparently that's cool, but nobody else can find him. So you go from that point up until the season finale, and, you know, there's like two pictures that this person resembles, but the rest is just like, who in the hell are these people? You know, if you put them all side by side, it's clear, A, it's not the same person. B, then you wonder, you know, does this person even exist, or did they just create him out of the ether?
Right.
You know, because even like mainstream type historians or what have you will say that, you know, the Bin Ladens are a huge family and one of 59 brothers and God knows how many cousins. So what better place to pick a random, you know, Middle Eastern type character that who in the hell could ever even verify that? Even, you know, like if I had 59 brothers, you'd be like, Osama, which one is he? You know, even people that are supposed to be related to him would take him a minute to figure this out, let alone somebody across the world, you know, and all the different spellings of his name. So it's
but, you know, I think it's important to point out that they always tell you what they're going to do, and they do it. They don't say, hey, we're trying to start World War III, but they tell you through this kind of stuff what it is they're trying to do. And this war, this World War III with Russia and China, is part of the script. So when I heard that the first thing they started to do, all these, you know, pundits on TV, well, what kind of an ally is Pakistan? If he was just right there and Pakistan didn't know.
Right.
And as soon as I saw that, I thought, okay, they're trying to implement it now. They're ready to try to start it. That's where this is going because of where Pakistan is located.
Right.
So you know that that's part of the next phase. And also, all these ridiculous details they made up from his diary and supposedly what they got from his computers and all this other nonsense, it has a purpose. Yeah, it's made up, but it's telling you the next rights they're going after. It's telling you where the next squeeze of the thumb is coming.
Right.
And it's what's happening at airports, because it said in his diaries that they were going to go after trains. So now you're going to have checkpoints at train stations. There's a no-fly list. Now you're going to have a no-ride list. And then when they want to squeeze us a little more, they'll really start pushing how he orchestrated all of this through the Internet. Then they're going to squeeze us for some kind of no surf on the Internet list. And then when they want to get rid of more of our freedom, it will be some kind of it will be random car bombs going off all over the country. And then there will be a no drive your own car list. So, yes, it is ridiculous. A lot of it is, but notice this is problem, reaction, solution. They're telling you what they found because they know how you're going to react, and they want you to react that way because this is part of what their final solution is this Armageddon.
And I heard another researcher bring this up, which was a fascinating point. That since so much of this does live in our minds, whether you believe it or don't believe it, the killing of Osama bin Laden is the permission for one to let go of that as a quote-unquote, you know, mind enemy.
Oh, right.
Because they don't ever do that, you know, for amnesty's sake. That means the next one is about to be introduced, so they have to kill him off because, you know, with all this mind control research they've done, I guess they know when they can overload the circuits and when they can't, that if they want to introduce the next round of fake or not fake enemies or not enemies, that they have to kill this one off. And like I said, like this guy was saying, even if you don't believe he was real, you now have mental permission to let him go, you know, back into the ocean, because the next one in his suggestion was the alien invasion cards coming, that they've got to start winding down this Muslim stuff so they can introduce the real deal enemy, which might not be a bad supposition, since too many of them have been playing with their free energy toys in public, and they've got to hurry up and cap that somehow. And by blaming it on the aliens, I think is about the only card they have. I don't see how they could, you know, maybe the leftover Nazis wherever they are is a possible card they could play, but I think they're going for the alien part, so they think the lowly little man wouldn't have any inkling that they could achieve some of these things. And that drives me nuts. Even in ufology, when they say this technology is millions of years ahead of us. So, you know, actually, it's millions of years behind us. We just haven't been paying attention for a million years.
Right. Well, I mean, and really not even that long ago. I mean, this is what causes civilizations to rise and fall over and over and over again. This isn't the first time we've done all this. So, right. You know, you'd think we'd get better at it at some point, but... You know, I agree that the UFO alien war idea is being seeded, but I feel like that's probably the last card they have, aside from, you know, all of the other stupid stuff they do to the planet to cause all of these earthquakes and stuff. And they do that in conjunction with planetary alignments that were already going to cause some kind of damage. They're trying to amplify it in some cases. In other cases, they're doing other things to try to cause it. But I think what I'm noticing, especially in the last couple of months, is the Russia-China issue. Yeah, people have talked about China a little bit, you know, in terms of China overtaking the United States as the next superpower. And really, I don't think anybody cares, to be honest with you, right? I mean, I mean, who cares if they have more money than us? I mean, most people would tell you, as long as I can keep my television in my car and the prices stay the same, I don't care if they have more money than I do. Nobody really cares. But the Russia issue, Russia is creeping into the picture, and that has me bothered, because that's very much part of that Armageddon scenario, especially if Russia and China team up together militarily. And I don't know if you've noticed, but that's starting to make its way into some of the stories.
Oh, absolutely. Just to, like people say, you know, oh, I just watch Fox News to keep a tab on the enemy or what have you, just to see what they're saying. I use the internet for that purpose and don't, you know, have cable TV pumped into the house. But in that same vein of thinking, every now and again, I'll read a book that I wouldn't normally. Just because it is so popular with a certain segment that I want to see, you know, what they're implementing in these thought patterns with people.
Right.
And I read one of the Left Behind. It was the first book in the Left Behind series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and don't quote me on the title of the author. It's downstairs. I'd have to run grab it. But it's obviously a fictitious dramatization of the end times rapture scenario in the unveiling of the Antichrist. But, yeah, they really play heavily on the Russia. And they kind of even leave China out of it in this, you know, mainstream, you know, I call them Chinos, Christians in name only. scenario that this book is peddled to, you know, and it's well written and is an entertaining story. It'd make a decent movie, but they really play heavily on the Russia card there in that book. So I can't think that, you know, the real life controllers and their other forms of media don't have that card very far up their sleeve.
Yeah, and the other interesting thing too is. The idea that Russia and the United States are we're having these energy wars, meaning with the weapons.
Right, the weather wars.
Yeah, and what's interesting about that is, yeah, there were some stories about Hurricane Katrina, as well as some of these cyclotronic weapons that were used on an embassy, an American embassy, by Russia. But what's so weird to me about this is reading all of the research, and it's impeccable research that Dr. Nick Begich did in his book Angels Don't Play This Harp. These technologies were co-developed between the U.S. and the USSR. It's not like, you know, we both had our own secret lab somewhere and we're trying to outdo the other guy. We were collaborating on these. You know, these, and people don't even realize, see, that's how insane these people are. They don't even realize how many nuclear bombs were detonated in the ionosphere just to see what would happen.
Right.
And there were scientists who said, well, what if it destroys the planet, you know, the atmosphere? Well, there's only one way to find out, so they did it. You know, it's mind-blowing that, you know, the race to have these kinds of weapons forces people to make those kinds of choices, because they're going to get to a point where the weapons that they have, especially now, can kill a planet. That's another thing we've done before. So people need to pay attention to that. But so the Russia thing is interesting because I'm hearing more of it, and I'm not really sure why. So I think that's going to, because they're planting seeds. I mean, nothing really big has happened, but you're hearing the whispers, a little Russia here and a little Russia there. So it feels like being prepped for something.
Well, even in my break with traditional history, and as I was trying to piece a lot of this together, the Caucasus Mountains played a huge role in, well, and one of the things I often wondered is, you know, when you study, you know, Native North and South Americans, you know, the Aborigines, the Sherpas, you know, the Zulus, all these different, you know, tribes, so to speak, all over the planet, you know, the I guess the Great White Satan, as a lot of people have been since then, you know, they kind of stand out. You know, everybody, you know, white people tend to think that brown people are different, but, you know, like on a planetary scale, it's kind of the reverse, and especially, you know, way back when. But anyway, I saw whatever happened in the Caucasus Mountains happen in this team of, well, what went on to be Caucasian people. Kind of say, all right, you guys head east, we'll head west, and we'll meet you on the other side, and this baby will be ours. But I've never saw Russia as, you know, an enemy. Even when I was a little kid, before I even got into this stuff, I'm like, you know, that's us. With, like, they make their R's backwards, but they don't look scary or, you know, it's like looking in the mirror. You know, I can understand, like, you know, the Osama bin Laden character, how, you know, Granny Huffnagel down the street would be scared of him. But I've never met a Russian I was scared of, not meaning there aren't any that are scary. But I've actually had quite a few interactions in working with a guy from Russia. And the conversations we had were fantastic, because as he was explaining to me his version of life over there, his tent in the military where he was stationed in Afghanistan. You know, you could replace, like, Vietnam and our presidents in his speech, and it was like, I'm not kidding. Their R is backwards and ours goes the other way. They're kind of like mirror images of each other. But his story was the story I've always heard here, just the reverse of the R. I mean, it was to the T. This is the same thing we were going through from his perspective as a lowly guy. But,
right.
Yeah, so that, I think they're refloating the Russian card, but I don't know how well that one's going to fly, because, you know, communism and World War II was a long time ago. And, you know, it's sad but true, in this current state, people need somebody, you know, entirely different than them to be, you know, truly, truly terrified. So I don't know how they're going to play the Russian card, but we'll see. Hopefully they do, because I think that would be the one easiest to blow up in their face. Because Russia's a big place. I think a lot of those people there are really sick of, you know, tyranny and world wars, and I don't think they would go for attacking us at the drop of a hat. You know, like they would hope, because that's the other thing about war. Like Bill Hicks says, it requires two armies to fight.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I just hope that what I hope. See, this is the thing. Everybody, it seems to me anyway, that all of the world leaders are in on this Armageddon thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe with the exception of Japan, which is probably why Japan ended up in the role that it is in the script, because I don't think they wanted to go along with it. So it's just like we were saying, in all of this, and all of these, you know, horrific things they're showing us, they're actors. So I think that's my concern, is that, because how often do you hear them refer to the world stage as the theater?
Theaters of war.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it makes me wonder if that's not really what's going on, is that they're all in on it, playing their, you know, little parts. I just hope that some of them come to their senses. But again, you know, consciousness is rising really, really fast. And from my perspective, consciousness means awareness. People are aware of a lot, not just how all of this really is a sham, but they're learning about the power of the mind, the power of intention, prayer, meditation. There are people that are actually implementing technologies that can disrupt storms, stop hurricanes. And so I think we're throwing a real kink into their, you know, Armageddon hose. But I really just hope that they get to a point where they realize it's not worth it. It's nothing good comes from it, you know? Nothing good comes from it.
It doesn't, and maybe their empty shell of a life and all their dissatisfaction. You know, wouldn't that be something if one of these people, because there was a video floating around for a little bit. It made a little bit of a noise, but it didn't go too far, because I have a rule, which I call them 85 percenters. A lot of these meta researchers, everybody wants to figure out who the shill is. I put them in an 85% category, so we don't even fight that. You know, just look for the similarities, the truth. You know, and whether these creatures can shapeshift, or, you know, they're just bankers, or they're all of the stuff you can't prove, just put it in your gray basket. Let's agree to agree. But there was a video floating around with David Icke, and somebody had taken one of the quote-unquote missing Rockefellers and made some facial recognition comparisons to, you know, the possibility that David Icke was one of these Rockefellers. And while all these people in the string of comments that followed were hating on it, I thought, thank God, maybe one of these people is sick of it. You know, whether he is a Rockefeller or not, and whether he's 100% legitimate or not, I just had a brief thought experiment that one of these people that high up did get sick of this crap and tried to devise a way to, you know, let the cat out of the bag, so to speak. You know, it's kind of a, because I don't think we're going to get a Messiah intervention or a Pleiadians intervention. But like you said, these dark forces, whatever their motivation is, there's still human beings doing it. We could still have human beings at that echelon, you know, come clean. I feel bad for them, because nobody would ever believe them. And maybe that's why a Rockefeller would have to pose as a David Icke, but... I encourage any Luciferian New World Order type listening to this show to come clean immediately. It would speed this whole thing up real quick.
Yeah, and really the fastest way, I think, to explain the whole Luciferian thing is with that one teeny, tiny, simple phrase that nobody really understands. Satan is the light.
Right.
That they believe that. They believe that by putting us through hell, they bring out the light in us. But wouldn't it just have been a hell of a lot simpler to just teach us how it works? Right? I mean, honestly. So, you know, don't teach me how to, you know, poison my garden. Teach me how to grow it without all the junk. Let's try it that way and see, you know.
And for people that even have that mindset, we have, just to name one itty-bitty example, let's say Arlington Cemetery. You know, we don't have to keep recreating that horrendous drama to learn from it. You know, if pain is a teacher, at some point, learn your lesson and stop smashing your hand with a hammer. Okay, we understand that, you know, the pain is there to teach you not to hit yourself with a hammer anymore, but look at your scarred knuckles. That's proof. You know, that's the Arlington Cemetery is the proof we need, not World War III. So if that's even anybody's mindset that, you know, evil's always going to be there, we have to deal with it so we can see the good, maybe kind of in the beginning, but as we move forward, you know, we have plenty of remnants of what could be accomplished through that line of thinking, that could be our, let's say, teacher in that department from now on. Let's take the lessons that are written down and move forward.
Yeah, I mean, that's the key, really, because the lessons are built into the program. So, you know, just a really super simple law, everything needs water, right? So if somebody says you're supposed to grow all the food for the village, that's your mission in life. You're supposed to grow all the food and yay, all right, I get to grow all the food. But nobody tells you have to water the plants and they all die. Well, everybody starves.
Right, you mean like water out of the toilet?
No, I mean, like, you know,
that's an Idiocracy reference when when they're watering the plants with Gatorade because they have
electrolytes.
The plants love, and they're like, "Why don't you give it water?" And he goes, "You mean like out of the toilet?" But I'm sorry, yes. Everything needs water.
Right. So everything. Oh my God, that's so funny. Yeah. So everything needs water, but you didn't know that, so you didn't water the plants. So everybody starves. They'll probably string you up because it's your fault. You'll go first. But you'll learn the lesson that there was a problem, right? That you can't grow food without water. That's built into the program. The lessons are built into the program. Evil is where you go and dump billions of gallons of Corexit into the Gulf of Mexico on purpose.
And ruin the water.
Yeah, and ruin it. And because there were people appreciating what it took for life on this planet to exist who lived there, right? Those people understood. They were fishermen. That was their livelihood. You know, they weren't out contaminating everything. They were living off of it. So to go kill it, well, that's evil, right? I mean, that would be, you know, that's the difference. To say that that's a lesson humanity needs, I strongly disagree with that, that was necessary to teach us a lesson. And I think that's the kind of insanity that we're dealing with.
Being fruitful and multiplying is about more than a woman's ability to obtain, hold down, and sustain life. This is about her generously planting seeds in minds, incubating them for 3 minutes of your time, and letting the mic go. Knowing God will help them grow, and every time you speak his truth, you will become fruitful. Multiplying his word, amplifying what's read, walking in what you heard, all the while planting seeds along the way. You see, anybody can make a baby these days, but can you evoke a thought in your listeners that will have them leaning sideways because they want to become your fertile ground? They want to catch your every verb and noun and use your flow to cause each seed to grow, making the manure that is pumped inside your mind by the media useful. Can you stand in front of children and speak in a level underneath speech because they respond to other stimuli, like if your words and your heart meet and reflect what the other has projected? We need to make sure the minds and hearts of our children are protected, nurturing more than just the wombs of newborns who are expected, making the spoken word tradition once again respected because God gave it to us, and its power he perfected. In Genesis 1:28, when he told Adam to be fruitful and multiply, his words weren't rejected. He spoke to nothing and the world was erected. If you speak of nothing, then the world is neglected, infected with brainwashed dummies, well-preserved mentally dead mummies who are so wrapped up in themselves, they're okay with never being able to speak words that produce life. who are all right with never having to think twice because once was hard enough. About our children who are growing up claiming to be tough, speaking violence into existence and having their own words called their bluff, not realizing they just committed verbal suicide. We need to be fruitful and multiply in Baltimore City because the powers that be are unleashing an educational genocide, causing our young people to become dead children walking. This is what we need to do. We need to stand up, actively listen, and be cognizant of how we are talking. Tread lightly when we are walking because the fruits of a mother's labor are constantly watching and listening. You can see their eyes glistening. And if you look closely, you can see their minds processing every little thing you do, multiplying every action and becoming every negative epithet you spew. I wrote this for the youth so that they will know the truth. I wrote this for you to give of yourself because this is an emergency. I wrote this with a sense of urgency, like I've only got 9.5 more years to write because I was only given 33.5 years of life, so I'm preparing for my crucifixion right here tonight through self-sacrifice. And I'm engineering my resurrection from death's yoke with each pen stroke and every word I've spoke. I wrote this because when we are being fruitful and multiplying, speaking life to children dying, we're giving them a little bit of what they need most. And if you're wondering what that is, it's hope.